And now, from the world's leading maritime and offshore news website, gcaptain.com, comes the talk show for maritime professionals and enthusiasts, bringing you the latest news, discussion, and interviews with the industry's movers and shakers. This is G Captain Radio with your hosts, Jeff Eccles and Captain John Conrad.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of G Captain Radio. My name is Jeff Eccles and in the studio with me is John Conrad. Welcome, John. How are you today?
I'm doing good.
All right. Thank you for being here. This broadcast is for the week of February 3rd, 2014. Listeners, this is the place we bring you the latest news and happenings in the maritime and offshore industry. Today, we'll be talking about the cruise ship industry. We have a cruise ship that apparently was cut in half, and we'll explain to you why that ship wound up becoming two pieces of a ship. We're also going to talk about, well, something unfortunate that happened out on the waters on a cruise ship. A lot of people got sick, and we'll explore some safety and food issues in the cruise ship industry. And then secondly, just because I really enjoyed the title of this one and I couldn't skip it, a cannibal rat-infested ghost ship is apparently all over the internet these days. So if we have time, we'll talk about that. So let's jump right into it. John, the cruise ship industry, you are a sea captain. You worked on various ships over your career as master and mate. Did you ever work on a cruise ship?
One of my early mentors gave me the advice, never take any cargo that can complain. No, I followed that advice. Cruise ship's a great life, especially if you're a single guy, see interesting ports, a lot of interesting things to do on a cruise ship, but the pay isn't very good. And you have passengers who are paying a lot of money for their vacation and just demand excellent service.
In terms of the rest of the industry, other masters and mates or people that work on ships for a living, other than you mentioned the pay is not very good, are there other generalizations about the cruise ship industry and working on those boats?
Well, most of the officers are not married, and their pay is not in the paycheck, they say.
Right. Okay, I understand.
It's in some of the extra benefits. You get a lot of extra benefits being captain of a cruise ship, in addition to the excellent food, dining experience.
So it might be a little bit of a if we want to call it this, a lifestyle choice as far as career for a person we're actually
I think
wanna...
Playboy would be a good term for a nautical playboy, if that's your career goal. And there are a lot of people who are interested in that. You can go to an academy and go on a cruise ship, but there are very few American flag cruise ships. They're all foreign flag, foreign officers. They're sometimes hesitant to hire Americans, and if you do, you are going to get a foreign pay scale, which is going to be much lower than American.
Much lower, ships. Yes. Okay, that makes sense. So in the cruise ship industry, we have a couple of things going on, articles that you've posted on GCaptain in this past week. One is there is a cruise ship out there that is in two parts. Why in the world would we have a cruise ship that is in two parts?
They actually split this ship in two. This is the cruise ship Balmora that is owned by Fred Olsen Cruise Line. It was built in 1988 at a length of 616 feet, and it was just recently pulled into the dry docks in Hamburg, Germany, along with another ship section, a 99-foot midsection that was brought in parallel. So they brought it into a wide dry dock, a dry dock capable of parking two ships, and they parked this section, 100-foot section of a ship right next to the cruise ship. Then they cut the old cruise ship in half. I don't know exactly what welding devices they use to make such a clean cut, but there's video on GCam, and you'll see it's a very clean cut all the way down the side of the cruise ship and all the interior bulkheads as well. And then they jacked up the ship, pulled it apart, and slid in this 100-foot section, rewelded the ship. And now, instead of being 616 feet, it is 715 feet long.
Amazing. And that really speaks to the design of these ships, that you can literally cut this thing in half. I wouldn't imagine when ships are designed, they're designed with that as a contingency. But this ship being split in two pieces, I just think about wires and all the components and lines, all the lines that are going back and forth. I would imagine that the work there would be just a monstrosity. So much to do and so much to reconnect.
It is a big job. The biggest job here is planning. It has to be very well planned, engineer. But now with computer-aided design, it makes the job a little easier and more practical. This is something that's been happening on board regular cargo ships, tankers, for decades. I worked on board a ship which the plan was, they didn't go forward with it, but they had all the designs. The engine room, there were rusting pipes and so forth, but the cargo tanks, it was a product tanker, so we carried gasoline, aviation fuel and such. The product tanks, because it had carried this petroleum, been a working ship all its life, the tanks were in excellent condition. So they decided they were going to come up with plans to put a new house and engine room section. So just cut off the back of the ship, scrap that, and weld a new back end on it. So it's been done for decades. The thing about the cruise ship is that, like you said, there are so many wires and cables and pipelines and the like. The concern with doing this is the structural integrity of the ship. You have to make sure that the ship is well engineered and strong enough to go through heavy seas with this new section in the middle. And the old steel is, it's hard to, you know, steel is, what is steel? It's a composite of materials.
Mm-hmm.
How do you match those precise materials? So you're going to have the old ship, it was made of one material. Do they make the new section of the exact same composites? Is it hardened at the same temperatures? It's impossible to make two batches of steel 30 years apart. So they have to engineer all this, and it's computer systems that allow them to put in all of these factors and guess at the changes of stability. And it's all going to be class approved before you start cutting. So, dozens of engineers have gone through these plans and made sure. And this particular ship, it also has a famous second life on the internet, because it had heavy seas a few years ago, and you can go on GCaptain and watch the video of this, but it's in, it goes to pretty harsh environments, and it needs to be structurally sound after this lengthening.
Well, and the article mentions, when you say heavy seas, the article mentions 50-foot seas, which, as you and I well know, are huge seas.
Yes.
And for the boat to survive that, that was certainly its structural integrity test. I would imagine that in terms of integrity, that would be one of the first concerns, but where they actually did the welds and that section that they put in there would probably be stronger than the rest of the boat. You know, it's sometimes when
yes.
a bone heals, the part that heals over is stronger than the bone surrounding it. So it would seem to me that from an engineering standpoint, the challenge would be you're lengthening this vessel, just maintaining the stability and the integrity of the vessel at the other ends, so to speak.
Yes.
Just common sense would say that. Now, cost would be the other issue here. You know, I'm the numbers guy, I'm the finance guy. It must make economic sense for them to do this as opposed to going out and buying a larger vessel. It's a bit surprising to me on something like a cruise ship that they would do this, because cruise ships have, as any vessel does, a finite life, an expected life. And it would seem to me that they would kind of run that expected life and then purchase a larger vessel at that time. But it must make economic sense at the end of the day for them to do this.
A vessel with new accoutrements and the latest thing, you know, you have to replace all the curtains and the bed sheets and the wood and things that have got worn on the ship. And that's part of the reason cruise ships have a limited life, is passengers want the latest new stuff.
Because this can't be cheap. This has got to be extremely expensive. So I'm surprised, frankly, to see that it would pencil out on a cruise ship. Your example of a cargo ship where they're expanding holds, I think that would pencil out pretty quickly. You've got the increased cargo hold. You divide that out over the increase of revenue and divide that out over the expected life of the vessel, and there you go. There's your break-even point. It's going to be a similar calculation on the cruise ship, but I can't imagine that those numbers would be so compelling that they would do that to a vessel, but I haven't seen the numbers.
Who would make that decision? Is that the banker or is it a board of director decision?
It'd be the bean counters, the pencil pushers. Yeah. So that'd be your finance department, and they would do their projections. And it must. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers, and I haven't penciled anything out. But the numbers must come out, or else obviously they wouldn't do that. unless there's something shady going on there. So,
well, part of the reason is that these new ships are getting to be so large, the Oasis of the Seas, thousands upon thousands of passengers at a time, that I'm looking for the financial term here, but that cost of getting in the game is phenomenally high.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be difficult to build a new ship because they expect all new ships to hold over 5,000 passengers.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. And that is a definite trend that we've seen in the cruise industry. As you and I have followed this, and as G Captain has followed this over the years, those vessels are getting monstrous, larger and larger and larger. So a 1,000-foot cruise ship these days used to be a big deal, and these days it doesn't seem to be a big deal anymore.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of people love cruise ships. It's one of the it's a high-dollar industry that's bringing in a lot of revenue.
And with the, at least here in the United States, with the grain of America, our baby boomers, which is the generation that was born between 1946 and 1964, about 80 million people, we've got about 10,000 people a day in the United States retiring right now. So those are the demographic that go on cruises. So those are going to be customers of these cruise ships. So that speaks to why they're making these larger ships and doing more business. I watch CNBC. It's one of the few shows that I watch on television because obviously it's the business channel. And they have very frequent guests from the cruise industry on that channel. So it's something that is a growing industry with that demographic trend.
Now, aside from working on it, have you ever vacationed on a cruise ship?
Only once. And it was many years ago, about 20 years ago, and my mom wanted to, I think she was having a big birthday or something or other, and she treated us kids to a cruise, and it was a short one. It was down to Mexico, the Mexican Riviera, I think they call it. Mm-hmm. So we went down to out of the Port of Los Angeles there, across from Long Beach, and we went down to Cabo San Lucas, Mazatlan, and I think maybe Puerto Vallarta, and then back up.
Sure. Yeah. Did you stop at Catalina too?
No, on that one they didn't, because you headed straight down. I think they may have gone all the way down to Puerto Vallarta first, and then came back up.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So then it was. I mean, I guess the truth is, John, is I haven't done one since.
Compelled to.
Yeah, it was okay, but it's not really my gig. Maybe when I get a little bit older, I'll be having the big 50 here pretty soon. So maybe as I approach 60,
there are a few gray hairs and.
Well, that's just
more than I saw 6 months ago.
That's just from doing this radio show with you. I didn't have those gray hairs before, so I don't attribute that to the age. I attribute that to hanging out with the salty sea captains.
Well, you look more regal, so
yes.
you're welcome.
That's right. maybe people will listen to me a little bit more now, John, with these gray hairs coming in. So something else, anything else as far as the structure of these ships? Because there was something else going on with an outbreak of food poisoning or something. So before we move on to that topic, is there anything else that you want to follow up with in terms of expanding these ships or the way that they're building these vessels?
Well, the big question is how many people can you fit on a ship safely? You have, they're saying, they're predicting cruise ships of up to 10,000 people. When you have 10,000 people, what are your chances? You also do risk assessment with the finances. What's the risk of having someone come on with a infectious disease and someone who forgot medicine or have a heart attack? And then what's the risk of a major incident like we had with the Costa Concordia in Italy? So I haven't been on a cruise ship. My wife has no interest. She's a mariner too. We both went to SUNY Maritime College in the Bronx. She has zero interest in it. I have a little bit, but if I was going on a cruise ship, I wouldn't go on anything with more than 500 passengers. And that's the big question of, and what's the point of being out in the ocean? Why not just go to a 10,000-person resort?
Right.
They're spending their time in the casino and in the pools and everything else. So why do you need to be in the ocean when you're having that many people is my question.
And I suppose for mariners, people like you and even myself, we're fortunate that we've spent time on the water. And we know the magic of the water and the wonder of the water. And we've spent that time out there. So we're obviously not going to go on a cruise ship simply to ascertain that aspect.
Yes, and there are excellent smaller cruise ships. There's, I think, Windjammer Cruises, which I've heard good things, which are sailing ships that are, a lot of their real luxury ships are smaller cruise lines. And then you have all these adventure cruise ships that are going to Antarctica, which you couldn't pay me to go there.
Yeah.
I was offered a free ticket, belong to this writer's group down in Los Angeles. We get ahead, and every year they do some fabulous adventure that I cannot afford personally. And this year they said, we're going to Antarctica. You want to come? I said, I can't afford it. And they said, we'd like you to set it up, look at the ship, make sure it's safe and everything else, and we'll give you a free, it was $25,000 ticket in exchange. I said, if you pay me $25,000, I'll consider it. But do you know how bad the Southern Ocean is? I've just rounded the tip of the Cape of Good Hope, and it's some of the worst seas I've ever seen. So the problem is the winds. There's no land to stop the winds from building and building as they circumnavigate the globe. And you have the worst weather possible, plus the cruise lines don't send their newest, most luxurious ships. They send the ones that are, they're about to take out of service.
You know? Mm-hmm.
People will not get on this ship in the port of Fort Lauderdale, but, you know, we get the people to fly down to Argentina. They're anyway excited about Antarctica. They walk on the ship, they're not going to turn around.
That's right.
You know? What did you expect? We told you it would be.
Yeah. We're going to Antarctica after all. That's right.
So these aren't the newest ships available, but there are other adventure cruises, which are a lot more interesting. A lot of cruises up in Alaska, beautiful scenery. And you have American flag cruise ships. You got to go to Hawaii, but I hear good things about them.
Very good. Well, and there are special challenges with having that many people, basically a floating city, out on the water because of the containment of the vessel. So we'll talk about that. Before we do, however, we are going to hear a word from our sponsor, Six Maritime.
Six Maritime is a leading provider of professional security services for the maritime industry. Using state-of-the-art military and industry practices, Six Maritime provides clients with tailor-made, cost-effective solutions that ensure both safety and security in every environment. Six Maritime specializes in the use of early threat detection technology for both mobile and immobile clients, giving them increased warning time to any threat. Avoid the violence, deter attackers, keep your crew and cargo safe. Leading the next generation of security, logistically simple, technologically advanced. Six Maritime. To learn more, visit sixmaritime.com.
Thank you for staying with us, and thank you to Six Maritime for being a sponsor of the show. We appreciate it. So, John, an article that was posted on GCaptain is that recently over 600 people were sickened on a Royal Caribbean cruise ship. So obviously they had an outbreak of something. I'll be honest with you, I didn't read the article, so I don't know if it was food poisoning
or
an infectious disease. So they don't know what it is.
The CDC, Center for Disease Control's, flew an agent. The CDC inspects cruise ships for cruise ships that come into American port. They're not American ships, they're foreign flag, but when they come into port, there's certain jurisdictional peculiarities that pertain to these cruise ships. Like the FBI can come on and investigate, you know, murders or missing people, and the CDC, which is not normally involved with shipping, can inspect for these health concerns. Well, the CDC flew a guy to St. Thomas, I believe, or one of the destinations, take samples, and they don't know what the cause of this. But 600 people sick, many of them with vomit and diarrhea. So that's a very exciting vacation.
Yeah, yeah, not exactly what you had in mind when you packed your bags. The cruise ships, because of so many people and so many operations going on, from waste refusal to food storage, and then food preparation, and then food serving, sanitary conditions, really, as I think about it, these ships must operate at a very high level consistently.
Yes.
So the opportunity for these things to occur is ever present, and I think the risk of it would be high. So I don't know if, obviously, when we hear of an incident like this, it gets a lot of press. But do you think, John, it's something akin to the very rare, thank goodness, plane crash that we hear about, and people say, well, I'm afraid to go on an airplane, but statistically, as you and I know and the listeners know, much safer to fly on an airplane than it is to drive your car down the block. With the cruise ships, do you think, would you say, in your opinion, that they're required to operate at this high level of efficiency, and that they do a good job of it, and that maybe the media sometimes actually overexploits these incidents?
A few comments on that. It really depends on the cruise ship company, how much resources they put in, how good the cruise ship is. If the cruise ship's got excellent reviews, and look at the reviews for multiple ships owned by the same company, those reviews are consistently good on travel websites, they probably do an excellent job. And then there are companies that reviews are horrible. So it's like picking a hotel in here in Morro Bay. You know, those things are effective. But the shipping industry is very different from the aviation industry. A plane crashes off, you know, say off the coast of San Francisco. Coast Guard, California Highway Patrol, every single government boat and helicopter is dispatched to look for survivors. Then what happens? They go immediately grab the black box. Yep. Then they do a huge salvage attempt. Right now in the middle of the Atlantic, there was a flight that was going from, I know it was Brazil to Paris. I don't know which direction, but sunk in the middle of the Atlantic. Water that was exceeded 10,000 feet, and the French government or in partnership with the Brazilian sent a whole armada of ships to go and salvage, pick up all the pieces of this plane and rebuild it in a warehouse to find exactly what happens. Now we have a shipping incident like the Deepwater Horizon that had a black box. It was probably burned and probably an incendiary, but no one went to look for it. The ship could be salvaged and rebuilt to get all this forensic evidence, the rig in a warehouse. That didn't happen, but not only that, there have been no pictures. So if you remember with the BP oil spill, there was that gushing well that we saw for months and months. Well, if the ROV turned around and went a few feet in another direction, we would have saw the rig. Now, they did the entire investigation without any of forensic evidence, which is crazy. We should be at least taking pictures of these shipwrecks. But if not, you know, we should be bringing them up onto land and rebuilding them and sucking down all the information we can about what caused this. But if not, we should at least be taking pictures. But shipping industry, we're not even conditioned to look for the black box. Mm-hmm. You know, we're asked these questions, and it doesn't put in Deepwater Horizon, black box, or VDR is what the shipping industry, Voyage Data Recorder. You won't find anything except GCAM's articles.
No kidding.
People aren't interested. But a plane crashes, there are people on board. Those people have families. They call their congressmen. They call, and action happens. So aviation incidents are investigated, lessons learned, new regulations at a much faster pace, much more intensive process. So planes are safe because of that. They're inherently more dangerous than a ship. But because of these controls and systems and learning from the mistakes, it's safe to get on an airplane. Now, as far as a cruise ship, the ships don't go through this, but if a cruise ship crashes or something happens, there are families that call their congressmen and call their senators. But we just haven't seen that in the United States. We saw it in Italy, and Italy's doing a huge move to investigate it. But the best investigators are transportation-type incidences are the NTSB here in Washington. They're not involved with the Italian cruise ship, and there hasn't been a cruise ship incident. And NTSB investigates ship incidents, cargo, but not to the same level, like I said, of aviation. So shipping companies do not have an incentive. They have an incentive to meet the safety standards. They have enough lifeboats. But they don't have an incentive to take the extra step as far as keeping you from dying aboard the ship.
Right.
But they do have the incentive to make sure the food's good, that you're not going to get sick, that toilets work. So which leads to the surprising thing that happens in the cruise ship, and I've interviewed a lot of executives in the cruise ship, and this is what I'm hearing from the inside, that when someone gets sick, when the toilets back up, when something like that happens, heads roll internally, and they do everything they can to prevent that from happening.
Right.
Someone falls off a lifeboat fails inspection, yeah, we're going to get to that, but it's not an immediate concern, because this is reaction to what's the cruise ship's bottom line is get passengers.
Correct.
Oddly enough, when Costa Concordia, there was just a slight dip in the ticket sales on cruise ships. Not people hesitated for a little bit, is this safe? And what do the cruise lines do? They lower prices.
Right.
and people jumped on. Oh, it's a deal. Now, you fast forward, and another Carnival cruise ship had a toilet backup off of Galveston.
Right, I remember that.
Same thing happened. People said, oh, do we think this could happen? I think, and they stopped buying tickets. Carnival lowered the prices, and what happened? People didn't book them. Mm-hmm. They suddenly had vacancies. And the reason is people cannot conceptualize. They don't think, I'm not going to die getting on a cruise ship. I'm not going to lose my life. My family member isn't going to fall overboard.
Right.
But I can, my toilet may very well back up.
Right.
So you have all these people who are paranoid that they're going to get sick and toilets backed up. And so the answer is the cruise ships, yes, they do everything in their power and more so to prevent illnesses of this type. But when you put thousands of people in a contained space, you've been on ships, all of the ventilation is shared.
It's, right.
You know, there are single point failures in that. Yeah. It's just, you are putting thousands of people in a steel box and sending them out to the ocean.
Right.
And that's going to cause problems once in a while.
Yes. Wow. Interesting. Very, very interesting. And do you see any trend toward things getting better in terms of the investigations that are done after these incidents, or a single agency? And we've gone to this theme quite a bit in the maritime industry, that many times it seems there is no international or global organization that can or will step up and do an effective job of bringing together, marshaling resources for a particular incident. In this case, the safety of these vessels.
It should be the IMO that's doing it, and they do have cruise ship regulations and so forth. The problem is it's got to be a very specific type of incident. The biggest safety changes in the history of shipping happened after the Titanic. Big news story. Costa Concordia was a big news story, but it affected the highest demographic of wealthiest people. I mean, you had CEOs, businessmen, lords, and parliament members from England going to New York, and powerful people lost family members. And the Costa Concordia was mostly just vacationers, middle-class people enjoying a vacation. So you didn't have that visceral, powerful people who are mad and angry. And you had people from very... London's the headquarters of the IMO. Mm. How many people who lived in London lost their life on the Costa Concordia? I'd have to lose it up, but not nearly as many as the Titanic. So there are all these factors that have to kind of create this perfect storm of disaster to create these changes, like we saw in the BP oil spill. There have been a lot of new regulations since then. But even that's tapering off now. People have forgotten how big the spill was. And so it's not necessarily the type of disaster, but where it happens. Ships sink on an average one a week in the middle of the ocean. No one hears about it. GCAM doesn't even report about it because we don't have any information. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So but a ship crashes into the San Francisco Bay Bridge or the Verrazano Bridge in New York. That's a big news story, even if no one's killed. So it really depends on the location, who's on board, what the financial impact is. And all these other factors. So to answer the question, I don't know. I hope not, because it would require a mega accident for those type of changes to take place. So I hope that doesn't happen. But
Does the industry, you think, largely self-regulate right now?
Yes, they self-regulate and they do a good job. Cruise ships are safe. They have a great, excellent track record of safety. It's just they're not ships. They're hotels on the water. And they do a very good job at avoiding storms and avoiding, but it's when the unexpected happens or when someone in command does something really stupid, like we saw in Italy, makes a major mistake, that these problems compound quickly because you have so many people on board a ship.
Right.
Did that answer the question?
Yes, it did. Thank you. Well, believe it or not, we're almost out of time again, John. We always have a good time discussing these issues.
We missed the mutant rats on another cruise ship.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you about. Any closing thoughts with regard to the cruise ship industry? And then I do want to hit on this cannibal rat-infested ghost ship, because that is another cruise ship of sorts that I just have to touch on, because I love the title of that article. So any closing thoughts with regard to the cruise ship industry?
It's almost a separate industry. I don't have many friends that work on cruise ships. A lot of the cruise ship guys hang out, they have their own lobbying arm, and they don't lobby with the rest of the industry. They keep themselves pretty apart. Mm-hmm. So it's very segregated from the industry. And mm-hmm. I think we don't do enough to lessons learned and cargo ships go to cruise ships and back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the reasons I started GCAM, bring everyone on the same page, be diverse, international people with new ideas together. And managers of cruise ships are big fans of GCAM and regular ships. And I think we got to learn from each other, right. Support each other.
Well put. So tell us about this cannibal rat-infested ghost ship. It seems that some rats have commandeered their own ship or something here and turned it into their own cruise ship, and they ran out of food and they started eating each other. These are some dirty rats. What's going on?
I said when the cruise ships when the curtains start to fade and they can no longer, not enough elbow grease could possibly get off the stains in some of the stateroom toilets, The cruise line industry has to decide what to do with it. And first they take it off the big money-making runs. The biggest cruise ships are in Fort Lauderdale, the newest. And then they get sent to Europe, and then they get sent somewhere else. And eventually they get sent to Antarctica or Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a Russian expedition cruise ship that brought people up to see the Arctic. And they docked a cruise ship in Newfoundland and kind of abandoned it there. And a few years later, the Canadian government took over the ship and were bringing it down to scrap it. They hired a crew to tug to bring it down, I believe Haiti or a Caribbean nation, to scrap it. And the line broke and this thing went adrift.
Oh my gosh.
And the Canadian Coast Guard said, no, we're not going to go out and reattach the line.
Wow.
So they monitored it until it got hundreds of miles off the coast and was clearly going in the direction of Europe. And then they gave up. There are beacons now you could put on the ship. A lot of rigs have. They could have put it on to monitor. They didn't do any of that, and we lost touch. Now, the most probable thing that happened is the ship sunk. It was in really bad condition. Winter North Atlantic,
mm-hmm.
a good ship, you wonder at times if it's going to make it.
That's right.
So chances are this thing sank, but no one knows. So we've reported on this when it first happens and 6 months ago, but the thing with the media is there are these things called slow news weeks. And they start wandering around and they see an interesting article on GCaptain from a year ago and they go, I wonder if anyone found this. And they start making calls and no one can tell them, yes, this sunk. So they say, it might be out. There might exist this. And then what's on the ship? Nothing. Well, you can't write about that. Are there any people on the no? What could possibly, the Alaska Maritime Action, what could possibly be on the ship? I don't know if rats could survive that long. So then they call a scientist who just specializes in rats. What happens to rats when he's in the ship, in the middle of the ocean? Maybe this is the interesting story. And he goes, 1% turn into cannibals when they run out of food. Oh, and then the headline goes, cannibal rats. So this story you're going to see in the news many more times over the next years, unless this ship did survive, which is unlikely. If it survived, then people say, the ship was here, they got it. But
interesting. All right. Well, Mike Schuler wrote that article. I assume he wrote the headline.
He wrote the article specifically after his wife, his mother, his brother-in-law, and someone else sent him the article because it was on, some big media website, this cannibal rat. I want to clear this up for everyone. This is not a new story. It's not a particularly interesting one.
So it makes sense now, the ghost ship and the cannibal rats. And Mike, good job on the title there, Cannibal Rat-Infested Ghost Ship Story Goes Viral.
And so, the authorities ask if you're out at sea and see the ship to please phone it in.
Who knows? It may be floating out there in the middle of the ocean still. So good job, Mike. All right. Well, that's a fun little story. I do want to throw in a plug here before we sign off. Listeners, as you know, I'm an investment manager. We've had the stock market take about a 4 or 5% correction, almost 5% now over the last week and a half. So if you have any concerns or you'd like to speak to a professional investment manager about what you're doing, I did have my 2 years out at sea, and I hang around with sea captains like John Conrad here, so I feel that I can relate to the Mariners quite well. My link is on the site there where you get this podcast. The website is eccleswealth.com, ECKLES, and then the word wealth.com. Feel free to go on that site, check it out, and shoot me an email or give me a phone call if you believe I can help you out. So there's my plug, John.
I think that's important. I was enrolled in an MBA. I stopped it with a few credits left to pursue GCAM because I wanted to launch GCAPTAIN. But I have some financial background enough to know Jeff has great returns, great advice, and really knows the industry. A guy who reads books constantly and is really staying up on it. But more importantly, I mean, it's hit or miss. Jeff is a really good investment advisor. But what I like is that he's been out to sea, because it's not the guys listening to this who are going to be calling you, Jeff. It's the wives.
Correct.
And
right.
They want someone who can empathize with them, who can say everything's safe while you're out at sea. And I think Jeff is a perfect person to do that. He was out for a very short period of time, but he knows what it's like out there. And I think that means a lot when someone's wife calls in after a correction of the market. And
yeah. Good. All right. Thank you, John, for those words. Appreciate it. So before we sign off, any closing comments for this week, John?
Job board, tons of new jobs are really, that's the big push of January. Get on there. If you're an employer and want to post jobs, then go on. There's a link for that. There are people you can call in GCAM that'll take care of you. That's where our big push is.
And that's been growing quite a bit, hasn't it, in terms of the volume of postings that are on the site?
So if you haven't been there for a while, please revisit it. A lot of new jobs.
Good. Excellent. All right. Thank you, John. And thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next week to keep up with what's going on in the maritime and offshore industry. On behalf of John Conrad and myself, Jeff Eccles, we look forward to speaking with you again next week. Be well and be safe.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest in maritime and offshore news. GCAPTAIN Radio is a production of GCAPTAIN.com and is recorded weekly in Morro Bay, California. For more information or to be a guest on the show, visit GCAPTAIN.com.